You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Welcome back. Final hour. There are an endless number of stories that we would like to talk with our next guest about. Not only the NCAA tournament heading toward the Final Four, but the Supreme Court issue today. But it just seems like Mark Emmert is always in the news. We talked to Pete Thamel about him a couple of days ago. And since then, Pete has written even more, talking about whether the winds of change are not already in the air. Pete, thanks for the time. Let's talk about your latest on Emmert when, because I was dumbfounded when I read your column, because I swear I read a comment the other day by some Pooh Bear in the NCAA hierarchy that said he was doing a good job and they were happy with him.
Well, it was interesting, Paul. Like, there's a little bit, like, I don't know, I call it in the stock market, when the stocks keep going up, they call it the Goldilocks effect. In college athletics, when someone who is perhaps not performing their job at a high level but still gets to keep their job is a similar thing, where just all the factors surrounding them are in place so they can keep on going even if the results aren't there. And we saw it, you know, most recently with Larry Scott out in the Pac-12, where it was fairly unanimous, the feeling amongst the athletic director certainly and a lot of people out there, that maybe it was time for Larry to move on. And he had a couple key presidents, especially the gentleman at Arizona State named Michael Crow, who were on his side, and he kept the job probably 3 or 4 years longer, and maybe even more than that, than most people in that area would have thought he was going to. And so the thing with Mark Emmert is that he has pretty much lost his constituency on the ground, meaning he has lost the commissioners for sure. I had multiple commissioners kind of estimate that at least 85% of them would like to see a change in the president's spot. Athletic director is a little harder to judge because you're going from University of Maine to Miami and Alabama to, you know, Eastern Washington, right? There's 300 and something in Division One, and there's D2 and D3 as well. But it's probably a fair estimate to say 85% there want change as well. I mean, let's put it this way: for all the stuff that's come out about Mark Emmert, has anybody stepped up to defend him? I don't think there's. I have not heard or seen a single person other than his bosses. So the Goldilocks effect here is that Jack DeGioia, who's the longtime president of Georgetown, he's been involved with a lot of Big East matters over the years, he basically saw his buddy in trouble and quickly gathered together the board, and people are still a little skeptical of how all that happened, and then they all sat around and decided Mark Emmert's doing a good job. And so the Mark Emmert is much quicker to rally the troops than he's been to figure out the enforcement issues, than he's been to figure out name, image, and likeness issues. And, you know, his defining trait of his tenure is now survival. And so this was a survival move, and it just really angered, really, really angered. Like, I want to really stress that. People are angry that he's basically more worried about self-preservation than anything else. And that's the only thing he's been able to consistently execute during his time. So, again, people can be angry all they want, but the bosses have now said publicly that he's doing a good job, even though nobody whose job he impacts with his decisions thinks he's doing a good job. And within the actual NCAA, he's really not particularly popular either. So it's an interesting crossroads. And, I mean, one president theorized to me, Paul, that maybe that's just something they're saying to put up a front and deflect for him, and they're gonna move on. But to get a group of 16 presidents who from wildly different backgrounds, places, campuses, who all have really important things to do in their day-to-day job, to gather together, to oust an NCAA president, to eat perhaps more than, if he's 21, 22, 23, so to eat more than $5 million to oust him, that's a lot of work for presidents to do. College presidents are generally not bold decision makers, and when they're grouped together, they like need to call a committee to form a committee to order lunch. So there's a, I think a lot of the anger is of the fact that we're probably going to have Mark Emmert for a couple more years, and people around the landscape are realizing that. So it was an interesting week, because when those Jack DeJoy comments hit the wire, and Ralph Russo, who's the AP college writer, did a great job getting him on the phone, because there was certainly an issue of whether Mark Emmert was in peril. That really just struck a chord within college sports.
Well, let's talk about the issues. And you know, we saw him today in San Antonio, you know, doing yet another mea culpa. You've got the later this summer situation with NIL. We had the Supreme Court today. I know that's a lot to chew on, but how could this Supreme Court issue, which we should hear about in late June when the court session ends, as well as the NIL, could any of that affect Emmert, or is he just got too much Teflon around him?
It's a good question. And I think, like, what the Supreme Court decides, Emmert's failures are that it's gotten to the Supreme Court, Paul, because, you know, there was years of runway. Like, this, the name, image, and likeness issue and the issue of giving athletes some sort of fair compensation, I mean, honestly, it's been going on for decades, but the issue was really roared the last couple of years. And you got to remember, this is a leader who 17 months ago identified name, image, and likeness as an existential threat to the NCAA. And so he's really been tone deaf, and he's really been protective instead of reactive. And I think that's ultimately why people, like, none of these issues have surprised anyone, right? Like, and you can even say that the federal basketball scandal was, there's some element of, okay, like, all of a sudden the DOJ drops all this news. So there's, like, somewhat surprising, but it's not like college basketball hasn't been corrupt for decades too, but there's just been no nimbleness and no results. That's what's frustrating to people. Like, you could have gone through the enforcement process on Arizona, Kansas, Louisville, LSU, pick one, right, Auburn, and gotten a result people didn't disagree with, but I just think people are really just irate that there has been no result, if that makes sense. Like, there's just been nothing tangible. There's been no action. It's the same apathy, and it's just sort of kick the problems down the road, form another committee, bring in Condoleezza Rice. And, I mean, one of the things that really got people upset over the equity issue in the men's and women's basketball tournament was that it was like pure instinct. Well, let's bring in an outside law firm and have them figure it out. It wasn't like, okay, there was an equity issue, we messed up, there wasn't communication between these two groups, we need to do better, here's how we're going to do it. It's like, let's sublet the problem to someone else, pay them a healthy amount of money to do it. I mean, this is an organization that just spent tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars in lawyers' fees. And so it's a lot of, like, more of the same. And Jack DeJoy's comments were basically saying the presidents are okay with there being more of the same.
Pete Thamel with us from Yahoo. Pete, every time we talk about Emmert, I start thinking, you know, sometimes in any walk of life, especially in athletics, if there's a really bright young, maybe not young, but candidate, then it would be easier to make a change. Is there someone out there who would who's credible and that's hireable or would even want this job?
Well, it is not a glamorous job, and it's not a job with unilateral power. It is a hard job. I will say that up front. Like, I have empathy for Mark Emmert to the point where this job will never really be a glamorous or powerful job ever again. The commissioners have way more power now than the NCAA president, and it's a little bit, by definition, a figurehead job. But it's also one where you can't do nothing. Like, it's not a Seinfeld episode. Like, you have to have some sort of tangible action, result, accomplishment. And you know what? Sometimes, like, just it's just been this state of inertia for so long. And that's where people are. Like, it feels like too many around college athletics, Paul, that Mark Emmert's not even trying anymore. And I think that's where a lot of the anger stems from.
In relation to those power brokers that you mentioned a minute ago, and it seems like even though commissioners report to presidents, it is the commissioners who seem to run at least college football. How would you describe, and I know there's a lot of changes going on with commissioners. You have a new one at the ACC and are about to have a new one at the Pac-12, but how do the commissioners get along with Emmert?
I think there's a pretty high level of frustration, and that is not just the football commissioners, the power commissioners. I think it's if there's 32 leagues off the top of my head in Division One, I think it's pretty uniform, because ultimately the Greg Sankeys and the Jim Phillipses and the Kevin Warrens, they don't really need Mark Emery. Like, he can get in the way a little bit, but like that, they have so many revenue streams from so many other places that he could, there are processes that are important to them, but he doesn't dictate their daily financial futures. Once you start getting into the leagues that are basketball dependent, NCAA revenue distribution dependent, and really basketball dependent, that's where the frustration grows. And then you get the leagues that are more altruistic, that are smaller, that are just being run, you know, to run college sports leagues, who are very reliant. And the frustration level is almost more palpable, Paul, at those lower levels, because they really feel that inertia. They really feel the lack of change, and they really feel like that the NCAA doesn't have the student athlete's best interest in mind, that they're not making decisions based on the holistic organization and whatnot. So it is interesting that the deeper you go in a lot of ways, and I can't proclaim I have, you know, intense Division II and Division III knowledge, because the sports I cover don't really overlap with those levels. But it is not just a few of the highest end power brokers who are frustrated. And I mean, you remember the letter Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated got about the lack of enforcement action, where I believe Sankey used the phrase crisis of confidence with the enforcement process. So like, these aren't new issues that we're dealing with, and I think that again underscores the frustration. Like, it's just, here we go again. Mark Emmert's putting his foot in his mouth. Mark Emmert's not leading in the right way. There's another issue, and this was just another reminder that familiar drumbeat is not going away anytime soon.
On that subject, before you go, and there's these enforcement issues which we've been talking about forever, it seems like, are you know, what's the calendar look like? Are any of these going to be resolved in the immediate future?
No, I mean, that's really the short answer. I mean, it's been four full seasons since that happened, and I'd be stunned if they're all resolved by the end of the fifth full season. I think now some may be, but if they are all resolved by the next Final Four, I would be pretty shocked at this point, just with the pace that it's gone. But I've said this on your show many times about NCAA issues, Paul, because y'all come on and you'll say, hey, what's going to happen here? Anyone who predicts they know what's going to happen with NCAA issues is lying, because they kind of make them up as they go along. It's a panel of humans. There's no consistency. Now, in this case, you're especially lying if you think you know the specific result of what's going to happen, because it's through this new IARP method. And I could kill you with the jargon, but I'll spare you. But it's essentially an independent accountability review process. And there's a few other jargon things that I won't bore everyone with. But essentially, there's a new layer in this enforcement process that was meant to streamline it, but has actually appeared to slow it down. And so a majority of the cases in the federal basketball case have gone through there. So no one really knows, even timing-wise, what it's going to be like, because there's methodologies involved where they could open a new investigator. The outside investigators could look at different things and request new interviews and essentially reinvestigate the process. So where it sits right now is that slow, and it could be slower to exponentially slower. But there's not some like imminent resolution, and all the cases are their own organisms, and they have their own tentacles, and then they have, you know, their own outside people looking at them. So no, I fully expect by the start of next college basketball season, for sure, I don't foresee any imminent change. And what I think has most people in basketball frustrated is that the university presidents involved at these schools and the athletic directors at these schools don't feel any urgency to move on their coaches, because they're just going to kind of keep carrying on and in most cases winning basketball games. And we saw some self-imposed sanctions this year with Auburn and Arizona. It'll be interesting to see if the just awful issues we've seen at LSU that have come to light in the last year, just the ethical shroud that's put over that university, if that maybe gives them some, makes them find some Jesus and they do something about Will Wade. But I mean, it's been four full seasons, so I don't expect anything to work quicker, and I don't expect any behavior to be changed at the leadership of these universities.
Pete Thamel, in addition to covering the basketball tournament, all these other issues. Pete, thanks. So grateful for your time. We'll talk soon.
Paul, thank you. Appreciate you.
Wow, what an incredible conversation there. We will take a break. Much more to come right here on a Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we are back in the final hour of our program, and Catherine is up next in Florida. Hello, Catherine.
Yes. Hi, Paul. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Just want to wish all your you and your listeners a blessed Passover and Easter. I want to tell Cat Daddy that Florida weather is much like that in South Carolina. It's 88 today. We're promised rain tonight and maybe a cold snap on Friday, but hello.
Yeah, we're here. We're here, Catherine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you could hear me. I said, in Florida, we hold our breath from May till November for hurricanes. But what I wanted to say, I just want to commend you guys for the great job you're doing with the March Madness. I mean, we thoroughly are enjoying watching it. And, you know, we like football, but, you know, basketball is our second. And this season is just awesome because you've got, you know, the Final Four now is going to be teams from out west where – in the past, it's usually, you know, the teams from the South. So it's sort of just refreshing to have that and to acknowledge, too, all these young men and that, you know, they spend most of their life playing or practicing and playing, and then the coaches also. But anyway, we really are enjoying it.
Well, Catherine, thank you, and appreciate the kind words. And we will be here on Good Friday. I know it's a holiday, but we will be doing the program, and I look forward to seeing all of you. Leonard is up next down in Florida. Hello, Leonard. How are you?
Hello, Paul. Leonard Thompson here.
Great to hear from you.
I'm doing fine. I just heard a call from a gentleman talking about Greg Norman.
Right.
There's not a lot in the world that I know about, but I know something about this. Greg Norman, for someone to say he changed the Shavs in his clubs before the last round of Augusta, first of all, he and Joe Braley were very close friends. I knew Joe Braley was a friend of mine, too, so I knew the process there. If he wanted people not to know what kind of shafts he was using, all he had to do was take the shaft bands off, and then no one would have known what was going on. But Greg Norman's not a dumb person, not at all. He knows what he's doing. He knew what he was doing on the golf course. That was one of the most absurd calls I've ever heard on your show.
I'm glad you called, Leonard. And for those who don't know, Leonard, competed in the Masters. He was a touring pro for many, many years. I didn't really know what to say to the guy because I remember the round as you do, and it's not even plausible. But he was so convinced of it, I just let him propagate his great mystery.
He should have thrown his shovel down, Paul. He kept digging. No one that knows the life that goes on the tour and how things work, it was laughable. It was absolutely laughable. I'm not saying someone didn't tell him that. But what he also didn't remember that you did very well, Greg shot 78, but the reason he lost was because Faldo shot 31 the back nine or something like that?
Yeah, I always felt, Leonard, and I was just an observer walking the walking with everyone else, but that Faldo was playing so well that Norman just started pressing, and then on the back nine, he did what a lot of people do. They imploded.
I think if you ask Greg today, he'd say, look, I blew it. I just blew it. He said, I let him get in my head a little bit, and I blew it. But I almost ran off the road. I was driving down the road. I said, what is this guy talking about? I could tell from your tone of voice, you were kind of on the same page.
Well, only because I remember it so well. And by the way, I probably wouldn't have believed it if he had told me a story about Walter Hagen 100 years ago. I've covered a lot of things. I mean, I haven't covered everything, but I happened to be there that day, and I remember everything about it because I also was a monstrous Greg Norman fan. I think I've said this before, but I was trying to get back really quickly, and he had a six shot lead, so I started playing around with my Norman wins the Masters column that morning. I didn't figure, why did I need to wait till in the afternoon? I had come back from the course, and as he began the back nine, I was as only a journalist would do, who thought he was going to have an easy afternoon. I was in a state of shock, as was the rest of the world.
I sat there and couldn't believe it. I'm watching it from a professional point of view, knowing kind of how they feel. I never led the Masters in the back nine, but I was close enough to have a chance to, with four or five birdies, could have been there. But I'm thinking, how is this happening? This is just not even believable. A player of Greg's caliber, when that happened, and then you start looking, it's like Arnold, when Arnold shot 39 the back nine in San Francisco,
right,
and everybody forgot Billy Casper shot 31 or 32. So without that, it's no story. He still wins.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, Norman was only the number one player in the world at the time. I mean, he wasn't like, he was some club pro from Boise, Idaho, who suddenly found himself paired with Jack Nicklaus in the final round of the Masters. I mean, he was the best player in the world.
Yeah, he was not in awe of Nick Faldo at all.
No.
He respected Nick Faldo greatly, I'll promise you that. But there was no fear factor there between those two at all. Neither was in fear of the other any at all.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Faldo did shoot 67 in the final round. So that had a lot to do with it.
It certainly does. 67 in the last round at the Masters gets a lot of guys a win.
Yeah, and Leonard, you understand it better than most. But when you're playing in the final round of a major like the Masters, and that was the one that Norman had to win, and the other guy is making shots and you're not, I mean, it's the noose around your neck starts to tighten pretty badly.
He probably started to press a little bit, and I think if you ask Greg that today, he would say, "Yes, I did." They said, I let it get to me a little bit. And, that was the part of it. When I watched it, I couldn't understand. Here's the best player in the world. And he was the best player in the world. I played a lot of rounds with him on the tour. He was really impressive. So was Faldo. But at that point in time, you couldn't, as you said, you couldn't believe what you were watching. Neither could I.
Yeah, I just looked it up. He had Norman still had a four-shot lead through seven, and then he lost five shots over the next five holes, and it was over. Leonard, thank you so much. What a day to remember. Always enjoy hearing from you. Leonard Thompson, a great PGA Touring Pro to set the record straight. And we are heading. Thanks, Leonard. We'll talk soon. We're heading to a break. Back with more.
Thanks, Paul. All
right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Okay, we are back. Appreciate Leonard Thompson calling us. I know some of you have missed the genesis of this, but we had a gentleman call us earlier who was convinced that the famous Greg Norman collapse in the 1996 Masters was caused by some nefarious reason. Joe, is that you?
That's me.
Okay, well, the floor is yours.
Let me tell you the story. I treated him for a short period of time in my hometown. I'm a family practitioner. His nephew is a patient of mine, and both of them gave me the story. And
let me make sure I understand, Joe. You treated who did you treat?
Both Dr. Braley.
Okay.
And his nephew. And
by the way, Joe, explain who Braley is. I think a lot of people missed that the first time around.
Miss what?
Explain who Braley is for those who don't follow golf.
He's a famous glove shaft maker.
Okay.
He came up with a device that would totally make the shafts equal. When you had a shaft to hit the ball really good,
right,
that you could use it for the next shaft, the 4-iron, the 3-iron, the driver, and not just...
Well, anyway, I'm assuming, Joe, you heard what Leonard said.
Hey, I did. Leonard, he's a friend of Greg. And that's what I was saying.
Well, I mean, Joe, I don't know how to put this in any plainer language. I mean, he completely laughed off your story.
I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is.
Me too. It's hard for me to believe that somebody has got as much money as he did would try to blackmail somebody into playing his shafts to win the damn Masters, which the Masters would have been worth anyway. But that's the story.
Okay, I'm glad we got this cleared up. It sounds like it's going to be on Dateline next week. What really happened in the 96 Masters? Let's get back to reality here and talk to Neely, who is in Alabama. Hello, Neely. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Paul. Hope all's going well.
Thank you.
Yesterday,
it is.
You were talking to a gentleman who was talking about meeting June and Johnny Carter
right
in Jamaica. My wife and I were there in Montego Bay, and the house and the course, the golf course, is on Montego Bay, and it is Rose Hall Golf Course.
Okay.
Rose Hall is also Rose Hall Resort, the only one in Jamaica. I mean, the only one in Montego Bay at the time we were there, which I hate to say was Kent's wedding anniversary in 1950 and my 50th birthday. But we played the course, and in the movie, a James Bond movie, Live and Let Die,
oh yeah,
with Roger Moore, there was a Barons of Meaty Voodoo shaman that rose up out of the ground, and it was on that golf course, I think on the 17th hole, maybe the 13th. It's up on a hill above Cash's home, and we were shocked when we were told that was their house. It was a little frame house, modest, with, if I'm not badly mistaken, has screened in porch, and we were like, what? That's Johnny Cash's house. But anyway, that's all I can add to the story. But you weren't sure where the golf course was, or he was, and I forget. But yeah, it was Rose Hall Golf Course.
Okay, well, Neely, thank you for sharing that. That was quite interesting. Let's check out Dennis next, who is in Oregon now. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, Paul, you were talking about the Exodus from Missouri.
Yes.
Earlier. And I called my buddy back in Columbia, who's the son-in-law of Don Farrell. You remember who Don Farrell was.
Anyway. Oh, sure.
And they were talking about it at the Rotary, and there's still somewhat of a mystery. Not a mystery, but they don't know exactly what's going on. And Smith apparently announced his transfer to Kansas State. And then we talked about Pinson, who they thought he's kind of a crybaby. Every time Konzo took him out, he whined. He didn't like it. So I'm sorry, I can't add any more.
No, that's okay. Well, I was concerned because thank you for sharing that, Dennis, because I was really emboldened by what Konzo had done this year. I know it ended badly, but it always does in the NCAA tournament. But thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Aiden is up next in Kansas. Hello, Aiden. Good afternoon to you.
Hello. I'm a big fan, and I was wondering, who do you think is a good replacement for the head football coach at the University of Kansas?
Well, Aiden, how old are you, by the way?
I am 12. I live in Lawrence, Kansas, so I'm a big KU fan, and I attend at West Middle School. So
that's fantastic. Really, well, I don't mean to be, I don't want this to come the wrong way, but I think it doesn't really matter who the coach is. It's going to be better than what you had in Les Miles. I'm trying to remember, have they hired an athletic director yet? Do you know?
I don't know.
No, yeah, because I think what I understand about KU is this. They're trying, you know, they fired Les Miles. They got rid of Jeff Long. They're trying to get an athletic director out there, and then the athletic director will do a search for the coach. It's taking a while. This is now a story that's a month old. I've heard a number of names. Let me put you on the spot as a KU fan. Is there anyone in particular you would like to see?
You know, I don't have anyone in particular. I really just think that as a KU fan, KU is really special to me, and I've been going to football games for 5 years with my dad, and I really think what keep on happening to us KU fans is that we get all excited about this new coach, and we think it's going to be great, but then something happens, and it just seems like basketball is where it's at, but I love football. It's my favorite sport.
Well, Aiden, as you know, Kansas is the birthplace of basketball, so there's a reason.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's so famous out there. But I mean, Kansas. What was it? I don't know. 15, 20 years ago, Kansas was playing Missouri in a 1-versus-2 matchup. It can be done, but I always felt like Les Miles was going the wrong way. We'll see if we can get some information on that, and you stay in touch with us, Aiden, and we will find out where the Kansas search is. I know the AD was first, and then the head coach will come second. Obviously, they're not in a hurry out there. We will take a break. Still a few minutes to go here on a Wednesday afternoon. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.